Hello and welcome to episode 156 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where our guys get together to talk about games and God and how these things come together. I'm your host, Mike Perna, and for once that's pretty much true because it's just me. This is going to be a solo episode, but this is pretty much the episode that almost wasn't because due to a number of scheduling things that kept the guys away from the mics and an illness that kept me away from the mics so long that this is actually the second attempt at doing this because my voice was so thrashed that when I tried to edit the last one, I realized I couldn't feel good about myself giving you what I gave you in that first recording. So I'm actually doing it again. I'm hoping that this will provide better content now that I'm feeling better. So not only will I be able to speak in a manner that is worth your listening, but hopefully I'll also be better and more capable of editing and making this a good episode for you guys to listen, because this one's going to be a special sort of episode. It's going to be a listener, you know, driven episode, and I'll get more into that later, but to kind of keep with a little bit of the tradition of how we run things around here, I did want to spend a little bit of time talking about what I've been playing, because I'm super excited about both the titles that I have to bring to the table here. The first thing that I'm going to talk about is a game that the regulars are the reason why I was able to play it, because apparently there was a conspiracy behind the scenes driven by our own Daniel Fisher, who kind of gathered a bunch of guys together and raised the money to get me Guild Ball because they were sick and tired of me complaining about not being able to play this. If you're new to the podcast, or if you simply just decided that you were going to tune out every time I mentioned it, the short version of this game is that it's a combination of soccer and a deathmatch. There are primarily two ways to score points in this game. You can either take the ball and bring it to the other side of the field and kick it against the goalpost to score 4 points, or you can systematically take out the other team, which is every time you take somebody out, that's 2 points. Depending on the length of the game you want to play, you're looking at anywhere from 8 to 12 points. I love this game. It is a bit on the complicated side. My brother and I sat down, and when we played, we did have to, because this was the first time either of us had done it, we did have to go back to the rule book a number of different times to just remember all the different values and all the different conditions and what that meant. But once you get over that hump, once you get past that level of understanding, we were rolling, and it was great. And it's not an accessible game, but compared to other war game style titles, this is very accessible. And the fact that I got the kickoff box meant I had all the little templates I needed. I had all the figures I needed to field not just the one team, but 2 teams. And oh, it was so good. I ended up winning, and I actually ended up winning scoring points. I don't think I took out anybody. I think it was entirely just due to my ability to kick the ball really well. I got my boy Flint up there to just do his thing. So I did lead my Masons to victory. It was so good. It's dangerous because I now want to get guilds that I think will be more towards my playstyle. The kickoff box comes with the Masons and the Brewers. They're both fine, and if these are the only people that I ever have in my life, I'm okay with that. They're good, solid teams. But I keep looking at the Hunters and the Engineers with their wooden and mechanical robots, and I keep looking at the creepiness of the Morticians Guild, and I'm like, I think I want any of those. So this might hurt my wallet eventually, but thankfully I'm on a Perna family game spending freeze. So, you know, at least there's that. At least I can stop myself because I have to. The budget simply is not there. Otherwise, I would be doing a lot of explaining to my wife about why I need all these little figures in my life and why I'd be sending them to Daniel or to my buddy Brett to make them look pretty. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about games that I've been playing is a really interesting one. It's called Quill, and it's a single-player letter-writing role-playing game. A single-player letter-writing role-playing game. Now, single-player role-playing games are not new. The most famous one of these is Lone Wolf, but there are a ton of them out there, especially when you're looking at indie games. So that wasn't what caught my eye. It was the letter-writing aspect of it, and I said, What do you actually do in this game? And oddly enough, it is exactly what it says it is. You play the game by writing a 5-paragraph letter. Let me break it down mechanically for you. You choose your character, and your character is set up by the game. It gives you several options. And the character has 3 stats. It has penmanship, language, and heart. And all these skills are used to make checks throughout your letter that you are writing as to whether or not you can get points by being clear and precise, on whether or not you're going to be able to use an inferior versus a superior word, or whether you're going to be able to flourish that word, aka make it sound extra awesome with adding adjectives and adverbs that don't make it awful. So the whole point of this game is to get these points, because at the end of the scenario, it tells you if you score X amount of points, it's, you know, the greatest thing ever. If you score X amount of points, you're literally like banished from the kingdom, and lots of things in between those two extremes. The scenarios are great. I haven't read over all of them because not only was I able to pick up the source book, I actually picked up a couple other books as well, because all of them are kind of a pay what you want scenario. So while technically I could have gotten all 3 of them for free, I really do believe in paying somebody when they make something awesome for you. And I would highly encourage that be an attitude that all of us kind of embrace. So I will, you know, caveat to that. I will say that I only gave $1 a piece because I may want to support people, but it really is kind of like a pamphlet. So again, even if you want to make sure that you're giving these people money for what they've created, it's not going to break the bank by any means. So I've read through these scenarios, and they're really interesting. It's stuff like, you know, you want to marry this lord's daughter, or you know, you're trying to reach somebody at the church, or there's all this stuff. It's generic medieval setting, except for the one book, because of course I had to pick up the source book that means that you're dwarves writing home from the mines. Cause of course I had to. But anyway, I've been fascinated by this. Now, I understand that there have been many times in this game, in this podcast, and in what we do here, that I say, I love this game, but I recognize it's not for everybody. Quill is even more so that. Quill is a game that I could give it to some people I know, even diehard, avid role players. I can give them this and they would hate it. Because literally all you are doing is writing a letter. So if you're not up for that, if you're wanting, you know, daring do and monster slaying, this is not your thing. You are literally writing courtly letters. But for me, as a guy who really loves random writing prompts and really enjoys just developing this whole meta narrative as letters upon letters start being created, you can actually try to think of how they string together, and that stuff, it really entertains me, especially when things can go horribly wrong. And yeah, there are things like you are banished from the kingdom. Like, there are all sorts of the random craziness that can go on, and I love that stuff. Plus, I love just stretching my writing skill. As a guy who enjoys writing stuff, I enjoy that stretching. And the fact that it gives you words that you need to, you have to do at least one of the chosen words in every paragraph. So the fact that you can slip those in and try to create a flowing sentence and a flowing structure that allows for those words to be added in. Oh, it's so good. Plus, the mechanics of whether you succeed or not are simple. The three stats, penmanship, at the end of every paragraph, you roll your penmanship stat. If you roll a 5 or 6, you get a point. Because the idea is that it's so legible and so pretty and so gorgeous that it speaks well of you. Language chooses whether or not you're able to use either the inferior or the superior word. If you use the superior word, you're really impressing the people with your use of language. And so you are choosing the superior word and you get a point. If you use the inferior, you're pretty much just boring them. Heart skill allows you to add a flourish. And like I said, that's expounding upon the word you choose. The interesting thing about this is that with these flourishes, you have to choose whether you're going to flourish a word before you make the language roll. So it's not like you can make the language roll, know that you're going to do that, and then make the heart roll. You don't know. And if you flourish an inferior word, you actually lose a point. So it's a mechanically simple game that's really easy to get. And I'm fascinated by it. It's to the point where I'm going to, at some point, go down to like Barnes & Noble or even Staples or something and get myself a blank notebook specifically for the purpose of playing this game. Because I'm that enthralled by the possibilities of this game. So I wanted to tell you guys about it. Go, I believe it's at DriveThruRPG. I believe it's still there. I got it when it was on sale, but I believe it's still pay what you want for these books. So definitely check it out. It is well worth the couple bucks you're going to throw at it. And it's really entertaining. If the idea of doing random, you know, fanciful writing assignments gets you happy and intrigued, do this immediately. Okay, all that said, I want to move on to what we're going to do for this episode. Because I've been sick, because it's been impossible to schedule all of us together because either the guys couldn't do it, or I was sick in bed, or a combination of the two, we couldn't do the normal. So I decided, I brought to the guys the opportunity that we could call an audible. And that I would go to you guys in the tavern, and I even jumped over to our friends over at Game Church City. And I said, folks, I need your help. I am stuck and I need questions because we're going to do an Ask Me Anything style episode of Game Store Profits. I said, it can be serious stuff. It can be silly stuff. I don't care if you want to ask me how we developed the philosophy of ministry at Inroads or what's my favorite new flavor of Oreo cookie. Everything is on the table. Hit me with it. And some folks came up with some really cool questions that were really fun. To the point, and I'll probably remind you at the end of this as well, there's quite a good chance that if you guys like this, you need to let us know. Because if you like it, we'll probably do another one of these where it's not, you know, kind of last minute. And all three of us, myself, Daniel, and Jeff, can get together and do this kind of thing with all three of us. Because I think that it's really fun. It's fun to let you guys know a little bit more about us and where we come from. And it also gives you guys a little bit more ownership of what we do here. So if you like it, be sure to leave comments either in the tavern or on this post when it goes up, letting us know that you really enjoyed it, because we want to give you guys the content that you want. So yeah, let us know. All right. So with that, the questions. The first one is coming from TR Knight, who is our friend and website contributor. TR took me literally when I said it can be serious or silly. So he kind of gave me one serious one and one that it wasn't really silly, but one that could be considered his fun question. And he did give me the quotes. The first question references when I was with the folks at Game Church at the Academy East. I did a session that I referred to as incarnational gaming. And if you listen to the last bonus episode of this podcast, you can hear that. TR asked, did I come up with the term incarnational gaming, or was I inspired by someone or something else? And he also asked if I could explain how it developed. Yes, TR, that is all mine. I'm sure that it's not, you know, an entirely unique idea. I'm pretty sure that I was inspired by many different things. I could say that I've always been, I guess we can call it, intrigued by the concept of incarnation. It's kind of the thing that when we talk about Christ being with us, it's something that we either, I don't say disregard, because I don't think you can possibly disregard it and be a Christian, but I think that it's something that we often overlook or just simplify to the point that it just kind of is a thing that we don't really take the time to really understand what it means. And so the idea that God would take on flesh is something that we say in churches all the time. The idea that God, who had no business being anything like us, became one of us. That's big. And the idea that we have taken that term that, yeah, in this case, when we talk about Christ's incarnation, it's a very religious term, but it doesn't have to be a religious term. It also is something that's used in a secular perspective as something that embodies something. And that's the kind of thing that I really strove for when I talk about this. The short version, in case you haven't listened to that yet, is that with technology doing what it's doing and online capacity doing what it is, and even board games going online with stuff like Tabletopia and Tabletop Simulator and all the different apps that people are coming up with, I argued that there is still something important and beautiful about being in the same place and playing with people. That occupying the same place and time is a good thing that you should be pursuing. And that idea of just embodying that experience, that was what it came down to. It's that idea that you give flesh to it. Because I think that's something that we can easily step away from. And I think that it's to our detriment if we do. If we step away from that, we're doing ourselves a disservice. TR's second question was, he asked me, who is my dream team of gaming, aka four to six people I know that I'd love to get to table if I could, if all things were made available, who would I love to play with? This is like explain the universe and give three examples. The list of people that I could put on this is astronomical. I can talk about the people that I do play with that I always love getting together and I wish I could get together with more. I can talk, there's so many different options. So it was, I do want to stick to the parameters of the question that TR asked me. And so I did think about it and I narrowed it down. Oddly enough, TR was the first one that came to mind, and that could be because he was already on my mind because I was answering his question. But I did actually get a chance to play Sola Fide with TR when he and I first got it. And he and I actually, if you go on our website, you can see my review of Sola Fide. And TR and I kind of had the same experience with it. It's good, but we both kind of wish it was a much better game than it actually is. So that experience was great. I loved playing with him, and it was super fun to hear his daughter's commentary in the background. I love playing with TR, and I would love to be able to do that in person more than we have. Last time I saw TR in person, it was at Gen Con, and you know, maybe someday I'll be able to get back to Gen Con and we'll be able to make that happen. Obviously I want to play with my boys, Sean, Daniel, and Jeff. What a lot of people, well, we've mentioned it before and it has come up, But one thing that is a shame is that other than Sean, who lives only a couple hours drive away from me, I rarely have gotten to see Daniel, and I have never been in the same space with Jeff Romo. We do all sorts of stuff together. We've been running this ministry now for, gosh, almost 5 years now. And I've never been in the same room with the man. I want that fixed, and I would love to do that over the table. A person that would definitely have to be at the table would be Derek White, aka the Geek Preacher. Derek is he's my older brother from another mother. When I first saw Derek, it was a YouTube video that somebody sent me, and I said, oh my goodness, how did I travel 10 years into the future and become this man? Derek is an incredibly awesome individual. He's an amazing person to be with. And yeah, I would do anything to be able to game with him regularly. And then my buddy Dave is another one. Now, I don't know if I've mentioned Dave by name, but I know I've mentioned Dave by experience, because Dave is a guy who literally used to live on the other side of the world. He was working in a church in Jakarta, Indonesia. And for the longest time, he has wanted me to teach him how to play Dungeons and Dragons. And I couldn't, because it's a 12-hour time difference between here and there. So when I was about ready to, you know, settle in for the night, almost go to bed at midnight, he was having lunch. So it was rare that we'd even get like Skype calls, let alone sit down and play a game of D&D. So that got remedied when Dave came back into the States, because not only did he and his family move back to the United States, he moved to New Jersey. So he is now only like 2 hours drive away from me. And so as soon as that was able to happen, as soon as we were able to orchestrate it, Suze and I went down there. I taught him and his buddies how to play D&D. And that was a spark that ignited a great flame, because literally days after that, he and his buddies were emailing me, what books do I need to keep D&D happening? That has led to other things. Dave has talked to me about all the different games that he's purchased and how he and his wife play them all the time. He's told me about how she schools him at Blood Rage, which always entertains me. When the Rising Sun Kickstarter was going on, he and I were texting each other constantly about all the stretch goals as they were getting hit. So Dave has become a right and proper nerd, and I want to encourage this. Dave is one of my best friends walking the planet, and the fact that he is getting excited about this hobby is just something that really makes me happy, and I would always want to have him at the table too. The next question belongs to Thatcher Ferguson, who asked me what my favorite memory of a game would be, either video or board game. I'm actually going to up this. I have both a video and a board game memory, and I'm going to throw in an RPG just for giggles. Video game, I have to go all the way back, because when I was a kid, I had the Nintendo Entertainment System, and this was back in the day when nobody cared, you know, about making games easy or that you'd be able to see the ending of them. They made them next to impossible. So it wasn't uncommon for games not to have the save feature. It wasn't uncommon for games to just make it brutal hard to get to the end of it. There was one game in particular that had no passwords, no save, and only one life. That was the game called Rygar. I can say, with much pride, actually, that when I was a kid, I defeated Rygar. It was one of those games that I needed to make sure that I kept the game on, turned off the TV, and put up a sign saying, do not turn off this Nintendo no matter what. Because I would just play and play and play. I'd have to go to school, and so we would say, nope, no one can use this TV. And because my parents are patient and wonderful and realized that they were raising nerds, they allowed it. And tagging out with my brothers, we ended up beating Rygar. And I can say that it was one of the proudest achievements of my life. We went flipping nuts when that guy died. It was such a hard game. No continues, no nothing. It's still insane to me that we did that. Similarly, board gaming, I have to say there's a reason why HeroQuest is sitting on the shelf behind me. As entertaining as a game as it is, the reason it is always going to have a special place in my heart is memories of playing that where my dad was running the game and it was me and my brothers. Any of those games, that's it. That's my favorite memory. Role-playing games, I could seriously mention a bunch of stuff because there are so many things that have happened at tables that were amazing. But the one that I want to bring up is the first time I played a game called Reflections. I played it with Brent Brown, who you've seen on a bunch of stuff on our YouTube channel. Brent and I both backed the Kickstarter, and Reflections is a two-player role-playing game where you are pretty much samurai about to fight a duel to the death, and you flash back to their lives, talk about how they became friends, how they betrayed each other, how they tried to get the relationship back together, and then ultimately to the final conflict. There is one die roll, and it's to see who dies. Playing this game with Brent was intense, not only because it's a very intense role-playing game, but the thing that floored me about it was the fact that I had literally said early on, I won't go into all the mechanics because I've got a lot of stuff to cover, but the short version is that it is very hard to have a tie. There is almost always going to be a clear winner in this game. The way the dice mechanics work, one of you is going to be dead. And I had literally said, okay, this is what happens in a tie, but there's no way it's going to happen. So whatever. Yeah. We died. I say we, because we actually ended up tying. And in the case of a tie in Reflections, both people end up dead. That game ended with both of our characters dead over the gravestone of, I believe it was my character's father and his mentor. There was literally like 5 minutes of silence over the Google Hangout as he and I just took in what happened there. And after that silence, it was broken with me saying, you know what? If either one of these guys survived, I would have been unhappy because they were both terrible people. The reason this memory sticks out to me, because it's fairly recent. The reason it sticks out to me above all the other ones is that reminded me of how powerful the role-playing experience can be. And I still, Reflections by far is one of my favorite role-playing experiences. It's an amazing little role-playing game, and I will be happy to play it with anybody who wants to. It's so good. Remember how I said that silly options were on the table? Kyle Matthews asked me what I like on my pizza. There's precious few things I don't like on a pizza. Basically, if I like it on anything that isn't a pizza, I also like it on a pizza. I will say that if you ask me for a favorite, my favorite is actually an unlikely thing. For some reason, it actually came about because of the fact that my soon-to-be sister-in-law, this was one of her favorite things ever. And it is apparently a specialty of a pizza place that is now literally right around the corner from me. And so there was one time she was coming over and she's like, I keep talking about this. I'm going to bring you guys a pie and here you go. So the whole family can share and learn about how awesome this is. It was a BLT pizza, bacon, lettuce, and tomato. And if you're like me, you'd probably think, wow, that sounds disgusting. Who would ever want lettuce on a pizza? That was exactly my thought of it. But I said, you know what? This woman is going to be my sister and my brother loves her. And so, you know, whatever. I want to do right by her and I will try this pizza. I then tried this pizza about four more times. Oh my goodness. It sounds awful, but it is so good. So yeah, BLT pizza, oddly enough, is my favorite. Nicole McKinney asks, what is my favorite Gen Con memory? This is another instance where it's like, you know, explain the universe and give three examples. Wow. There are so many things I could say because I've been to Gen Con a handful of times and every time I go, it's just full of awesome. If I had to nail it down, I couldn't give just one, but there are a couple that stand out. One of them is just every time I would be hanging out in our hotel room with Derek White, because there was not a time I went to Gen Con where I wasn't sharing a room with Derek. And while Gen Con goes till all hours, Derek and I don't always make it to all hours. And so a lot of times when people were doing all the crazy late night stuff, Derek and I would just make our way eventually back to the hotel room. We didn't want to go to sleep. We just didn't want to go out and do stuff. So we would just hang out, and it ended up with us talking about all sorts of different things, about the way we view scripture and theology, as well as all the different gaming stuff and the cool things about life and ministry philosophy and just, you know, mythology and sociology. And we'd have these incredibly deep conversations. So any of those would be among my favorites. I would also say meeting Larry Elmore. Larry Elmore is an artist that I first was introduced to because he drew the original covers for the Dragonlance books. And that's how, that was my introduction, but it was by no means the limits of my love for the artwork that man created. The fact that I got to shake his hand and say, "Sir, I want to thank you because you literally drew my childhood." Between Larry Elmore and Tim Hildebrandt, literally that's every piece of artwork of fantasy that I had as a child. And wow, it was so amazing just to meet him and to be able to tell him that. And finally, the first time I got to do Gen Con at all, like I really hadn't even been doing Game Store Profits long. I don't even think Inroads was officially a thing yet. And I think we maybe had just started Inroads as a thing. I think we were still calling it Project Awesome. Like we hadn't even officially named Inroads yet. And so I was still very much new to the board gaming community. And because of the fact that I was listening to podcasts, I was following people on Twitter, and Marty Cannell from Rolling Dice and Taking Names said that, hey, we've got the Grizzled and we're at the gaming room. Anybody want to come? I said, absolutely. So I showed up, and I had talked to Marty before this. So, you know, I knew him and his wife, and, you know, I was super happy about that. But then all of a sudden I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, I'm going to play with Marty and Vanessa. That's awesome. Oh, look, that's Chaz Marler. Oh, look, that's Mark Streed from Board Game Corner. Oh, look, who's that next to us? Oh, that's Rodney Smith. Oh, that's Joel Eddy. Oh, there's a whole lot of really awesome board gaming media people. And immediately in the back of my mind, the song from Sesame Street, "One of these things doesn't belong here," was playing in my mind as I'm like, I don't know how this happened. And we got to play The Grizzled, which became my sleeper hit of that year. And wow, that whole moment was great because, you know, some of those guys I only vaguely know and I only vaguely talk to, but Marty has become a real good friend of mine, and it's great. It's really awesome to have made those connections with people. And it just showed what Gen Con's about because, you know, oftentimes we think that these people, you know, nobody, they would never talk to somebody, some random dude. And you realize they're just people who do this pretty much as a hobby because most of us ain't getting paid for doing this. We do this because we love it. And so it was really just a great thing. And it's pretty much the epitome of the convention experience. Now, Jason, I love you, brother. You've been a part of the community for a long time, but I have no idea how to pronounce your last name. There are way more consonants than vowels here, and I don't want to butcher it on the air. So Jason P, and you know who you are, Had a really good question. What are three ways gaming has made the world a smaller place? And this one, if there was one question that I got for this episode that made me think the hardest, it's this one. Because how does that even look? What does that even look like? So I did eventually narrow it down to three things. Some of them are stuff that you've heard me say before and some aren't. The first thing I said was it creates space and a time that things start to slow down and life stops being so much about getting stuff done and being very pragmatic. And it gives people the opportunity to really get to know each other. The idea of stepping outside, making stuff happen. Now, maybe that's just me, the East Coaster in New Jersey, which is home of people who are just so super driven and super busy that they can't do anything. But man, gaming provides that outlet that lets us step away from all that stuff and take time to just be together. And so I think that it takes the oppressive nature of the world around us and just kind of steps that away. And when you do that, that's when you actually build closer relationships. Something that you've heard me say a lot is that it removes boundaries between us. All the stuff that makes us say, oh, I would never connect with that person or I would never speak to that person. Now, granted, we would never probably say I would never speak to that person. But if we're really honest, there's, you know, no reason that you would necessarily speak to somebody, you know, from a different way of life or a different, you know, location or age bracket or what. There's all sorts of things that we put up, whether we do it intentionally or not, that we just don't connect with people. Gaming says, forget all that noise, get everybody to the table. We're going to make this work. And that brings everybody closer together. The last one I would say is that it creates empathy. And this is, I think, is the biggest one and the overarching one. It reminds us that we're human. It reminds us that the arguments and the points of view and everything are tied to people. And that will always make the world smaller. Because when we're fighting an issue, it's this big, giant, uber thing. But when we're fighting with a person, we want to find harmony. We want to get understanding. And gaming allows for that. Gaming reminds us that there's a person on the other side of the table. And that, I think, is the most profound way that gaming makes the world a smaller place. Jason asked this on the Game Church City post that I put up there. So it really makes sense that he put it this way. He has, what's a better way to spend $50, a board game or a video game? And the short answer to that is obviously going to be a board game because of who I am, but I have a reason for that. And it's not just because I'm a hobby gamer and I occasionally video game. The reason is because there's no such thing as a system spec for a board game. You're not going to have to worry about finding the right connection or finding an old enough TV or worrying if your machine isn't going to be able to handle it. A board game is a board game is a board game. If you love it, now granted, a game might feel out of date, but if you love it, it will always be there. You will always be able to play that. And so I will say that because of that longevity, because of that availability, hands down to me, a board game is a better investment because whether it's, you know, 10 minutes or 10 years, you will be able to play that game. Joe Monzo, who is a local boy, Joe asked, how did I go about building relationships with devs that they let us put our seal of approval on the box? There's a caveat to this before I get into the larger thing, but only one of the three companies that we have given our seal of approval to have actually put it on their box. That's Kara Games who did that. But really, the larger thing, because yeah, building relationships has been huge for us. I've been able to cultivate. I was just talking about how playing that game with those guys, a lot of those guys are my friends. I talk to Mark and Marty and all those guys on Twitter. And that's just not even everybody. Like I talk to a bunch of people who are devs. I talked to people who are publishers. I talked to people all over the place. We had Jason Tagmeyer and Jeff Engelstein at TavernCon. Like I've been doing work to get to know people and to build those relationships. And really, I know this sounds kind of corny, but all it is I talk to them. Primarily it's been over Twitter, how I make those connections, but it's just talking to people. That, yeah, it started out talking about games, but since then we've talked about all sorts of different stuff. I mentioned Marty and his wife, Vanessa. I got to meet Vanessa because I was talking to Marty about his family. One of his kids was in our role-playing game when we did the Pathfinder play-by post. Like, we just talked to people. And so that's always what it's been. Now, we've gotten, I think part of the reason why our seal of approval now shows up on Commissioned is because of the fact that I've gone out of my way to talk to Pat about a lot of stuff. And we won't, because he's making stuff that we really like, we make sure that we always support them as a company. So part of that is that give and take relationship. Like, man, we love what you're doing. And so, yeah, it's really easy for somebody to have a good relationship with somebody who's going out of their way to make sure that you're getting supported. But really, it's just talking to people. Because again, they're just people. They're people who love board games. And so it's amazing just how being able to talk with them, just like talking to anybody on the street, talking to anybody that you see every day, can make a huge impact. And so that's all I do, is I just talk to people. Gabe Smith hit me up with a ton of questions. Some of them are very inside baseball that you need to know the joke to understand. So I'm not going to address those. But he did give me a bunch of them. Best one player game. There's a lot of them out there that could very easily fit into this. So I'm not going to go with best so much as my favorite. It's Samurai Spirit, hands down. I really enjoy the theme. I enjoy the puzzle of it. And I love, you know, samurai based on the Seven Samurai story that turn into animal people. Cause why wouldn't I love that? It's a super great game. It's a lot of fun and I love playing it one player. Best party game. This is closed the gap a little bit. It used to be hands down Cash and Guns, and Cash and Guns is still up there, but a game from Smirk and Dagger has kind of caught up and tied them. Dead Last is a game. He called it a social collusion game, where you are trying to convince the group to vote a certain way to eliminate another player. So not only are you trying to get somebody to vote somebody off, if you happen to vote different than the rest of the group, anybody who voted other than the majority will also be eliminated. So I love how that game plays, because people can just be downright silly in the ways that they try to signal to the rest of the group that so-and-so needs to be the one they vote off. I love it. It's a ton of fun. Best Christian game. Now, full disclosure, as I said, Commissioned is the game that has our seal of approval on it. But I will also tell you that one of the reasons it got our seal of approval is because it's one of the best games for what that seal means, which is a game that is a great game that also happens to be about biblical literacy or the experience of either the church history or Christian life or scripture or whatever. Bar none, it's a great game. It's part deck building. It's part area control. It's so good. I really enjoy the heck out of it. And that's why I would say, hands down, it's my favorite Christian board game. Favorite game to play with people who are new to board game. I hate being that guy, but it really does depend. Like, my brother is not a board gamer at all, but I've never hesitated to just throw him into the deepest of deep strategy games, because I've spent my entire life playing video games with him. So I know he understands how a gaming system works. So when I tell him this is the rules and this is how it works, I have no problem that he's going to figure it out. In fact, he jumped into a game of Scythe. Now, Scythe is a complicated game, but he actually took somebody's place and within like 3 minutes, not only knew what the game was and how it was played, he also realized what the other person was trying to do. I could give him anything, but with people who are not so good at gaming, I can't do that. And so what I usually try to look for is something that is going to either teach them skills to get them into other games or use games that they already know, like simple card games, and get them into games that add a little something to that basic stuff. So games like Sushi Go and Forbidden Island. If you know how to play Sushi Go, anytime I say this is a drafting game, you know how to play because Sushi Go is just drafting. Forbidden Island, I can show you how to play Pandemic after you've played Forbidden Island because it's essentially mechanically the same game. Likewise, trick-taking games like Diamonds or Niet or anything like that. All of that, if you've ever played Hearts or Spades, so basically if you've ever opened a deck of cards, you already know the basics of how that works. It's just the finer points and the additional stuff that you'd need to be added on and pointed out. So that kind of stuff, I love to get people who aren't into that kind of depth of gaming. I'm like, look, you already know the basics. Let me show you what this does and what this adds. Brandon Z asks, how do I handle conversations with other Christians who don't see eye to eye with me about playing games with demons or evil things in them? Is there a defense for being able to play such games? How do I handle it? The essential is I never force anybody to do anything they don't want to do. Gaming is essentially a fun activity. Yeah, it can be stretching as all get out, and I invite people to enter into things that kind of make them slightly uncomfortable, that they can, you know, push against the edges and see what happens. But gaming is so wide and so varied that nobody has to do anything. So if people don't feel comfortable with that, people don't feel like they're willing to explore those stories, then don't. Just don't. There's no need. There's no requirement. However, I have had people that ask me why I am okay with it. And as such, I have developed an idea of why I think there's value there. And the reason that I feel like I'm okay doing this is that ultimately Jesus wins. And that sounds very like a cop-out answer, but really that's at the heart of why I'm okay with this. Like, I'm not trying to poke the bear when it comes to supernatural things. Like, I'm not saying, you know, don't worry about supernatural stuff. Like, that's not me. I am one of those, I am a guy who behind me on my wall is a painting of one of the demons from C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters. That's who I am. And part of that is because I have an understanding of the supernatural and how that works. And ultimately it comes down to Jesus wins. He already has. We're just playing it out. So I don't worry. I'm not like in constant fear of that stuff. I'm aware and I'm conscious of it, but I'm not afraid of it. Also, it's the idea that these stories, these games are fiction. Even the stuff that's set in the quote unquote real world, like everyone always points out Cthulhu. In a world where Cthulhu exists, Jesus doesn't. And that's not some profound thing. I'm just saying one of Jesus's claims is, I am God. There is no other God besides me. So if he makes that claim and Cthulhu exists, we're already in crazy territory. We're already in an existence that isn't what we're living in. So when you're dealing with a world that isn't ours, no matter how close it looks to ours, you're talking about fiction. It's kind of the same way that the Marvel Universe, their understanding of hell is not actual hell. So you're dealing with a a literary understanding of a concept. And when you're in that world, in that realm, I cite Chesterton's Dragon. G.K. Chesterton has a famous quote about this, and specifically about fairy tales, but the same concept applies here. In fact, Chesterton's quote isn't about fairy tales specifically, it's about the boogeyman. But that quote is super long and very old English, and so it's super hard to quote in a way that a modern audience can listen to. So instead, I cite the Neil Gaiman paraphrase. Fairy tales are truer than true, not because they say that dragons exist, but that they say that they can be defeated. I have no problem with, you know, demons and Cthulhu and all that stuff in fiction. And that is because it tells me and reminds me that they can and will be defeated. When I know that I have Christ behind me, I understand that these things do not stand a chance. And so I do not care whether I roll a die and they beat me in a game. Because they can beat me in the game all they want. When it comes to the real deal, they're done. So I don't mind at all. But again, I'm never going to make somebody participate in that kind of storytelling if that kind of storytelling interrupts or kind of contradicts their own understanding of faith. Because we've said this time and time again, no matter how much we get on this podcast and say, man, this game is great. Man, this is awesome. And holy cow, you need to do this. No matter how much we praise a game, if that game comes between you and God, put that game down and never pick it up again. That is infinitely more, your relationship with God is infinitely more important than any gaming experience. But that is my defense. When people say, how dare I do such things? And finally, I will wrap up with Chris Bailey, who simply asked, how can people get involved with Game Store Profits? And I'll kind of expound on that and say that Inroads Ministries as well. For starters, you can write for our site. Something that only a handful of people have ever taken me up on is that I'm always up for pitches. If you want to send me a pitch for something that you want to write about for our site, feel free to do so. We basically have a couple different, you know, categories of article. We have stuff about getting started in gaming. We have stuff about the theology of play, which is basically either spiritual or philosophical things, like the deeper stuff that comes out of playing board games and tabletop games. We have well, you're not really going to write about news for us, so, you know, that's not going to be a thing. But we also have The Abbey, which is using games in ministry. Any of those have the option that you guys can write in them. Just send me a pitch and say, I want to write about this. I will gladly work with you on that, because right now, 99.9% of the content that is on our site is created by me, and I am but one man, and this is my second job that doesn't pay me, and it will probably soon become my third job that doesn't pay me. So I would love it if you guys would write for the site. I will work with you. I will gladly play editor and make it look good and make your writing sing. But yeah, send me pitches. You can always run an event and call it an Inroads event. Really, the only thing that, you know, you need to have in order to be an official event is, one, you say it's an Inroads event, and two, you abide by the no preaching rule. You do those two things, I'll give you my blessing. In fact, if you contact me ahead of time, and as a handful of you have done this, I will send you stuff like stickers and brochures. I will do that. If you want to support the ministry and have, you know, have some info about us and what we do, let me know. I will send it to you. That's literally some of the reason we have money in the budget for that stuff. I will gladly make that happen. Really, one way that's super simple is just to tell people about us. Our community has been growing by leaps and bounds. We just recently did our 500th person in the tavern, and we still need to sit down and figure out what we're going to do contest-wise for that. We've been talking about it, but we haven't nailed it down yet. But it will happen. But the it's been growing so much that we hit 500 the other day, and now we're already up to like 512 or something like that. By the time I actually get this up and running, then we might be at 515. Who knows? But all of that comes down to you guys. Now, granted, I work hard at, you know, doing the whole search engine optimization nonsense, but essentially it comes down to you guys talking about us to other people. So that is always a way that you can help us out. Something that you can do is go to iTunes and rate and review our podcast. It seems like such a silly, insignificant thing, but algorithms be algorithming. And the way that people find us easily is if we're higher on the list of podcasts. The way they assess who should be at the upper echelons of the lists of podcasts is the amount of ratings and reviews. So if you want to step out and go to iTunes and rate and review us, that would be awesome. We'd really appreciate it. And I'm not going to lie, there's a little bit of an ego boost when it comes to hearing nice things about us. Lastly, and I by no means, you know, want to guilt anybody into this, but y'all asked, if you have the ability, clicking the donate button on our website is a huge, huge way to support us. Not a one of us is getting paid for this. Not a one of us is able to do anything other than really kind of squeeze to make these events happen. We try to do so much on a tight budget. Thankfully, because of some gracious gifts, it's the first time that we've had enough in our bank account that we weren't getting charged fees for not having enough in the bank account. But a lot of the stuff that we do, a good chunk of it comes not from the ministry's funds, but from our own pockets. Like, this is something that we do because we feel passionately about this ministry, but we can only do so much. We've done the math over the years, and at times we've talked about the fact that if everybody who listened to this podcast gave us $1 a month, then this could be my job. Creating content for you guys, running game days, that kind of thing, that could be my job if every person who listened to us gave $1 a month. So it really is a huge way that you could support us if you would just to set up a recurring donation on that. But I understand that not everybody can. Heck, I just said that, you know, we're on a tight budget and I'm going to need a second job soon. I fully understand not being able to do that. So if you can't, do not feel bad about that. I completely understand, and I never want to guilt anybody. And I always want this. Nothing's ever going to be behind a paywall as long as I can afford, as long as I can stop it. This is always going to be for everybody, but that is a huge way you can support us. And that said, it looks like that's going to be this episode. This has been a ton of fun. I don't even mind the fact that I had to re-record this, you know, once my voice decided to not be awful. I'm glad that I was able to do this in a manner that I don't sound like death. So the next episode, we'll get Daniel and hopefully Jeff back in here because Jeff's been going through some stuff. But until then, always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.